content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian Magazine, North Carolina History for Students. We're going to be reading from Volume 64, Number 2, the Spring 2025 issue, Surprising Stories, How Primary Sources Bring History to Life. I'm going to begin with A Junior Historian's Guide to the State Archives of North Carolina by Danielle Sharilla and Katie Crickmore. Danielle has worked in the outreach unit at the State Archives for just over 1 year and received her graduate degree in library science from UNC Chapel Hill. Katie has worked in the Public Services Unit of the State Archives for 5 years and received her graduate degree in Public History from UNC Greensboro. Hello from the State Archives of North Carolina. Researchers from across the state and even across the country visit us to learn more about North Carolina's history. Today we're going to learn how to visit the State Archives to do your own research. But before we start our research, we should learn what archives are. Archives are collections of documents and other records. They preserve or protect evidence of what happened in the past. These historical documents help researchers piece together stories of how people, places, and things have changed over time. The State Archives houses records created by North Carolinians over 3.5 centuries. Now that we are ready to research at the State Archives, let's figure out a research question. What about this? Let's say your family has lived in North Carolina for a very long time. You could try to figure out what your great-great-grandparents' names are, and maybe a little about what their lives were like. Research about your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, and your whole family is called genealogy, which is the study of your family's history and how everyone is connected, often shown in a family tree. When researching your genealogy, always start by asking your family if they remember anything. Let's say you ask your mom, dad, or other relative if they remember your great-great-grandparents' names. Your mom says she remembers that your great-great-grandfather's name was George Williams. She also guesses that he lived in Raleigh in the 1890s. Wow, what a great start. Now that you have some details from asking your family, you can ask someone at the State Archives if they can help you learn more. You could choose to email our correspondence unit at archives@dncr.nc.gov. That's a group of archivists who try to answer research questions over email. Archivists work with the collections of the archives and know the records there really well. In your email, you should show all of the information that you have so far and ask a clear question about what else you want to know. So far, we know that your great-great-grandfather's name was George Williams and he lived in Raleigh in the 1890s. What we still need to know is your great-great-grandmother's name. A good way to ask this is, "Hi, I'm looking for my great-great-grandmother's name. I know that my great-great-grandfather's name was George Williams, and he lived in Raleigh, North Carolina during the 1890s. Do you have any records about who he was married to? Thank you." Now the archivist has enough information to tell you where to start looking in their collections. The archivist might tell you to try looking for Wake County marriage certificates since George Williams lived in Raleigh, and his wife's name would be listed there. Now you can plan your visit. When you come to downtown Raleigh to visit the archives, you'll come to the Department of Natural and Cultural Resources building at 109 East Jones Street. This building is where the State Archives, State Library, State Historic Preservation Office, Arts Council, and other offices are located. When you come into the building, stop at the security desk for directions. Once you get to the State Archives search room, your parent or guardian will check in and receive a special researcher's card for each person in your group. Next, you will tell the archivist in the search room what records you want to look at. They will go back into the stacks, which is where we keep all our records, and bring back records in special boxes that keep the papers protected. Here's when the best part happens. You get to look through the historical papers yourself and find the answers you're looking for. Remember, you're trying to find your great-great-grandmother's name by finding George Williams' marriage certificate from the 1890s. It might take you a while to look through the boxes since there were so many people getting married. But finally, you find your great-great-grandparents' marriage certificate and learn that your great-great-grandmother's name was Maggie Adams. The State Archives has records about more topics, too. After you finish your research on your genealogy, you could ask to learn more about the history of NASCAR, how women fought for the right to vote, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s visit to Durham, and more. As long as you have some details to tell your staff, we can help. Come visit us and see what North Carolina's history can teach you. Here are captions accompanying the photographs that are in this article. The Wake County Marriage License for George Williams and Maggie Adams from 1895. Middle school students visiting the state archives interact with primary sources. Some middle school students get a look inside the vault with correspondence archivist Allison Thurman. When you come to the state archives, you'll get a look at historical documents much like these. They are held in a special archival document box to help preserve them over time. Next, a closer look, surprising stories from primary sources. A soapbox derby car from 1972. Before 1971, girls were not allowed to compete in the All-American Soapbox Derby. But 14-year-old Priscilla Freeman of Chapel Hill was determined to change that. She spent more than 400 hours building her own soapbox car. She worked between school, homework, soccer, and music lessons, and built it using power tools and scrap wood. And she painted it purple, her favorite color. In 1972, she competed in the All-American Soapbox Derby race in Akron, Ohio. She set the fastest racing time that day and finished fifth overall, the first female to do both. The primary source reflects kids' fascination with racing, compared to the NASCAR story below, and it also documents the changes brought by the women's movement of the 1970s. The story it's referring to is NASCAR Race Car from 1988. Richard Petty is one of the most famous and successful race car drivers in NASCAR history. Son of racing champion Lee Petty, Richard carried on the family's winning tradition and became a Southern folk hero. He was popular with fans because he always took time to sign autographs and talk to people. Petty drove this 1988 Pontiac Grand Prix at speeds of up to 194 miles an hour, but it was traveling much slower when it was rolled inside the North Carolina Museum of History to go on exhibit. Question: this car is fueled by gas. Today, many auto companies are producing electric or hybrid cars. How might cars change in the future? What might future historians learn from this primary resource? A television from around 1931. Can you guess what this artifact might be? It looks like a bedside table. But like detectives, curators study every inch of a primary source to learn more. See the tiny glass opening on the top? That's a TV screen. Charles White of Greenville bought this mechanical TV set, a Hollis Baird Model 437, around 1931. It came as a kit to be assembled by the consumer. However, it was mostly a technical curiosity enjoyed by engineers and hobbyists. Regular black and white programs for the public would not become available until the 1940s and 1950s. Modern technology has brought us color programming and huge flat-screen TVs, but also smartphone screens that fit in the palm of our hands. Toy soldiers from around 1930 to 1940. In 1949, the citizens of France sent boxcars filled with heartfelt thank you gifts to the people of the United States, one for each state. The gifts arrived on the gratitude train, or the merci train. Merci is French for thank you. The gifts were a way to thank the American people for their aid and support during World War II. Each boxcar included thousands of items reflecting French culture, including art, antiques, decorative items, and gifts for children like these toy soldiers. Today, many of these primary source artifacts are being preserved in the Museum of History collection. Fun fact, you can explore this big primary source, North Carolina's Merci Train boxcar, yourself. It's been restored and is on exhibit at the North Carolina Transportation Museum in Spencer. A Howdy Doody marionette from between the 1950s or 1960s. Kids often like books and toys based on their favorite movies or TV shows, from Batman and Star Wars to Disney characters like Elsa from Frozen. But guess what? That's nothing new. After a start on radio, a character named Howdy Doody made his TV debut in 1947 as a cowboy-styled marionette voiced by show host Buffalo Bob Smith. Westerns were popular TV shows in the 1950s and 1960s. The popularity of the Howdy Doody show led to the sale of merchandise that included books, games, lunchboxes, and clothing, as well as a Howdy marionette like this one. Fun fact, according to the Smithsonian Institution website, the original Howdy's face was painted with 48 freckles, one for each state in the Union at the time of this creation. Alaska and Hawaii became states in 1959. Do you have similar toys, T-shirts, or products related to your favorite movie, book, or TV characters? What might they tell future historians about you and other kids living in North Carolina in 2025? Porcelain doll from the 1800s. How do curators date a doll? They might study the style of clothing and hair, or the materials that the doll is made of. This doll, Violet, has a glazed porcelain shoulder and head, molded black hair, and painted features. Her body is made of cloth, but her arms and hands are made of leather. These were common materials used to make dolls in Germany in the mid-1800s. Violet belonged to Mary Edings Tennant, who was born near Charleston, South Carolina. She later became Mrs. Samuel F. Venable of Asheville. It is a Barbie doll from around 1960. This primary source is more than just a stylish toy. It tells a historical story, not just about fashion in the 1960s, but also about politics. The Mattel Toy Company introduced the bubble-cut Barbie doll in 1961. It included a short hairstyle inspired by the one worn by First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy. Jacqueline was the wife of John F. Kennedy, the 38th President of the United States, and the youngest ever elected. The First Lady was wildly popular for her modern style and sophistication, and she became a major fashion influencer while in the White House. Red was one of Jackie Kennedy's favorite colors, which inspired this Barbie's chic red coat and pillbox hat. Fun fact, toys can be good sources of primary source research because they often reflect the culture, fads, and politics of the time in which they were created. One clue about the dates of these dolls, the materials. The Barbie doll is made from polyvinyl chloride, PVC, a common plastic used for toys and dolls beginning in the 1950s. Mid-1800s dolls like Violet were often made of cloth and a material called china, which is another word for glazed porcelain. Robson House from 1742. Wait, are houses artifacts? Yes, big ones. Houses and other buildings can be primary sources. They provide direct evidence of architectural styles, construction techniques, and how people lived. The Robson House pictured here is one of the most significant 18th century houses still standing in North Carolina, and it's the fourth oldest known dwelling in the state. Solomon Robson, a carpenter, built the house in 1742 near the Tar River. It was typical of houses owned by middle-class eastern North Carolina farmers. Fun fact, did you notice in this photo the overhead spotlights and even an exit sign? For years, this house was on display inside Our House, the North Carolina Museum of History, as part of the exhibit, The Story of North Carolina. Costume and flight jackets, one from 2013 and one from 1945. If you saw these two jackets hanging in the closet, you might think they look alike, but these primary sources tell two very different stories from North Carolina history. They are good examples of how careful we must be in making assumptions about primary sources. The jacket on the left was worn by a supporting character in the 2013 movie The Conjuring, which was filmed in Wilmington. It's one of many costumes and props collected by the museum to document the importance of the film industry in North Carolina. The flight jacket on the right belonged to Vernon Haywood of Raleigh. Haywood was one of the first African-American pilots in the U.S. military and a member of the Tuskegee Airmen, an all-black unit during World War II. Is it a primary source? Yes, but careful. Haywood did not wear this jacket while serving in the war, so it is not a primary source directly related to World War II. However, after the war, Haywood worried that the Tuskegee Airmen's achievements might be forgotten, so he decorated this jacket with patches from their units and the planes that they flew. Then he wore it to veterans' reunions and to speak to civic and school groups about the importance of the airmen's contributions. Haywood's work contributed to broader recognition of the Tuskegee Airmen. Next, from the editor, Kathy East. What do you think? Have you learned some new things from this issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian? I have. And it made me want to investigate the primary sources in my life. My mom's mother, Marcella Huff Pugh, was born in 1888 and had 11 children. She lived a long life, and I was lucky enough to know her until I was 9. After she died, my cousins and I were allowed to walk quietly through the hushed rooms of her house and pick one thing to remember her by. For some reason, I picked an old-timey iron. I didn't know much about it except that it was hers, and I liked old things even then. But Tar Heel Junior Historian made me a lot more curious about this old thing, so I did some research. I learned that this item is made of solid cast iron, and it's called a sad iron. Not because it's sad. The name comes from the old English word sad, which meant solid. But it might have made my grandmother sad to use it. It's heavy. So heavy you could use it to prop open your front door. Compare the iron in your family if you even have one. Clothes made of modern fabrics come out of the dryer almost wrinkle-free. Today's irons are electric, lightweight, and made from aluminum and plastic, not iron. But we still call them irons. And we still use the verb to iron. And now you know why. In the early 1900s, most people did not have electricity. Marcella had to set her iron on a wood-burning stove to heat up. That made me even more curious. so I decided to try it myself. I heated my sad iron on my electric stove, and then I tried to iron a shirt. I had to get a pot holder because the handle got hot. The heat and weight of the iron did a pretty good job of smoothing out the wrinkles, but it was hard and awkward, and I had to keep reheating it. How long do you think it would take Marcella to iron all her family's clothes this way? Now my sad iron makes me even happier because I know more about its history. Each time I pick it up, it feels like I'm holding Marcella's hand. It helps me remember her, and it helps me think about the ways my life is different from hers. It's like shaking hands with the past. Now it's your turn. Be curious. What can you learn about your place in history through your primary resources? Here are captions from the photographs from the editor. This is Marcella's sad iron, circa early 1900s. Sad irons were often triangular to make ironing around buttons easier. Marcella's cast iron sad iron meets a modern electric iron made of aluminum and plastic. Marcella Huff Pugh and her new husband Arch Pugh on the hill where they built their first house circa 1902. I always wondered about this photo because it seemed like most old photos showed stern people posing formally in studios beside a fern, not sitting casually outside in natural light. This issue made me want to know more. Through research online, I learned that the introduction of the Kodak No. 1 camera in 1888 and the affordable Kodak Brownie in 1900 revolutionized photography. These cameras allowed ordinary people to take snapshots outside the studio and capture candid moments of daily life. By the late 1890s and early 1900s, snapshot photography had become a more widespread hobby. People began documenting picnics, holidays, and casual gatherings, much like modern family photos today. Now I love this photo even more. Look for the stories in your primary sources. Now that you've learned about primary sources, what are you going to do about history? You can research your family tree or collect family recipes and holiday stories. Interview your neighbors about their childhoods, their military service, or the places they've lived. Or be a collector. Collect things that tell a story about the past, postcards, buttons, toys, or teacups. Write a letter to a friend or put together a scrapbook or time capsule about your life and what's going on in the world. Find out how your country, town, and school got their names. Can you think of more ideas? Junior historians like you don't just study history. You're also making history and creating primary sources. Next is the Fall 2025 issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian, Volume 65, Number 1. It's called Carolina Creates, Imagination and Innovation in North Carolina. And the photograph on the cover is the hands shaping clay on this issue's cover are those of Sonora Richardson Lynch, a potter and member of the Halawasaponi tribe. The photo is from her pottery workshop at the American Indian Heritage Celebration Education Day in 2014. Did you see the little head popping up in the cover, coming to life in her hands? Did you guess what she was making? It's a turtle. It's one of her favorite subjects. Now, from the Tar Heel Junior Historian Association Program Coordinator, Colleen McGilvery. Hey, y'all. I like to watch movies and plays. I love to read books. I tap my toes and dance when I listen to music. At home, I hang colorful art prints on the walls. And I'm glad I live in a place that inspires people to make art, like movies, books, music, and more. North Carolina has a long history of making art. People that make art are called artists or creatives. And the state has supported many of them. In 1963, the General Assembly established the University of North Carolina School of the Arts, UNCSA, in Winston-Salem. It was the first public arts conservatory in the United States. A conservatory is a school for the study of arts like music, dance, and drawing. High school and college students can apply to study at UNCSA. You may know of a few people who went there. Some of my favorites include Hunter Schafer and Danny McBride. But artists and other creative people don't have to go to a special school. They can create whenever. And people in North Carolina create. North Carolina is a creative place. I hope you're inspired by the stories in this magazine. Who knows what you might make? UNCSA is in Winston-Salem. The entrance to the school includes the sign with the school's name. I show off my pickle pride with this hat. On the hat is the UNCSA mascot, Peter the Pickle. Here are some of the articles that you'll be hearing read in future broadcasts from this particular issue. Adaptable textiles. Fashion, then and wow. The Big Banjo. Jugtown pottery, a living tradition. Decoys, an Eastern North Carolina legacy. A living tradition in furniture. From Sharon to Durham, Cornelio Campos paints his story. Drawing on our past, the history and role of the North Carolina Museum of Art. 2024-2025 Tar Heel Junior Historian Association Annual Contest Winners, North Carolina Historic Architecture Photography. Minnie Evans, Draw or Die. A Tar Heel Junior Historian Interview, Reclaiming the Narrative, Raven Dial Stanley's Journey Through Art. African Dance in North Carolina, A Celebration of Rhythm, Movement, and Culture. The Tar Heel Junior Historian Association Student Essay, The Importance of Historical Dancing. Creative Carolina. Carolina Creates, Imagination and Innovation in North Carolina. Stories from our collection, activities, and from the editor, What Do You Think? We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138.